It was the fall of 1997. It was in late October. Wayne was driving when he sees a woman hitchhiking near Eureka, California, and he immediately pulls over to talk to her. He convinces her to come back to his trailer, but all of a sudden, he notices that she's just lying there. She's just completely still. And that's when he is shocked to find out she's not breathing. This case is not just going to focus on the crimes of a serial killer, but all of the signs that led up to what he did and all of the times he could have been stopped. I'm also going to bring a unique outlook on this because I am going to go into detail about what his mother's life was like before she gave birth to him and the way that his upbringing impacted how he thought, felt, and acted. Today's story is about Wayne Adam Ford. Wayne was born on the 3rd of December, 1961 in Petaluma, California. The last video I did was about John Markle, and he was also born in December and in California. There are a lot of other similarities, and you'll find out which ones. Wayne's father's name was Calvin Eugene Ford, but he went by the name Gene. I don't see the name Calvin very often, and that is my father's name as well. His father was American, and his mother, Karen Bridget Danziger, was German, and they met in Germany when Gene was stationed there in 1957. Karen was only 16 when she met Gene at his birthday party. Gene was 4 years older. I read a book called Body Parts. I highly recommend it if you want to go in deep with this case, and it's by the author Caitlin Rother. She had evidence that had never been public. Wayne's mother struggled with issues throughout her entire childhood, and she was still basically a child when she met Gene. We're talking about a 16-year-old. Karen's mother, Vera, actually lied to her and made her believe that her grandmother was actually her mother until she was 9 years old. This is because she was born out of wedlock, and to avoid embarrassment, they kept it a secret. Karen matured physically very quickly. She had a very curvy figure by only 13 years old, and she would use it. She would tease her older male teachers, and she was attracted to older men. I guess some would say she had daddy issues, and she sought older men that she felt safe with. Karen and her mother absolutely hated each other, and they would get into these heated arguments and slap each other in the face. This dysfunction followed Karen throughout her life into other relationships. And when Karen met Gene, of course her mother didn't approve. She was overbearing, she was controlling, and Karen actually told Gene she wanted to kill her mother. She said the only reason she hadn't yet is because she didn't want to go to jail. After secretly dating for a few months, Karen had a plan. She wanted to move back to the U.S. with Gene, so she figured they could get married and she could just leave. And when she told her mother this, of course, her mom went ballistic. At this point, Karen's only 17. And just like most teenagers, when she didn't get her way, she lashed out. But it was a little more extreme because she ran to the bathroom while everyone was in the living room talking about what she just told them. And she grabbed a bottle of her mother's sleeping pills and took them all. She went to lie down in the bed, and she was hoping someone would miss her and go after her and find her. She did this because she wanted them to pay her attention. They finally did find her, but it wasn't very soon. So of course, the pills had taken effect, and they had to rush her to the emergency room. Doctors were informed that this was her second attempt at this. So they pumped her stomach, and eventually she did get her way. She moved to the U.S. after she married Gene, and once they were married, things changed. Remember, we are now talking about Wayne's father, so listen carefully because you're going to see some themes running through their relationships. According to Karen, Gene's sexual behavior changed. He was forceful, and when he wanted sex, he forced her to do it. Karen said she was still so young, and she felt like she got herself in a bad situation. She wasn't ready for the seriousness of this relationship. She was just trying to get away. She wanted to leave Germany. And I can't help feeling bad for her in this situation. Some people want to say, well, she got herself in that situation, but this poor woman locked herself in the bathroom and she would sleep on the floor to avoid sleeping with him. However, on the other hand, she would sneak off to bars and dance with other men. Maybe that was to make Gene jealous, I don't know, But one time he actually went after her. He carried her out of the bar on his shoulder. He was a big man. Someone tried to stop him, another man, and he punched the guy in the face and just kept walking, like nonchalantly out of the bar. But Karen wasn't innocent. She was actually very violent towards Jean as well. Remember, she would slap her mother in the face. So she would punch Jean right in the face, and then he would fight back, and it was super dysfunctional. Karen was also very concerned with her looks. So much so, when she got pregnant with her first child, Wayne's older brother Rodney, she didn't want to get fat. She put herself on a restrictive diet. She only ate 900 calories a day when she was pregnant. And by the time she gave birth to Rodney, she was anorexic. She never wanted to be a mother. She had no motherly instincts, and she lacked the ability to connect. She didn't know how to nurture her children. And after having Rodney, she swore she would never get pregnant again. She didn't want to have more children. So of course, she went on birth control. But her husband says he doesn't recall that ever happening. Karen claims that less than 2 years later, one night her and Jean got into a heated argument and he forced himself on her. That night she happened to be off the pill and it caused her to get pregnant with Wayne. I don't know whether to believe the story. I wasn't there. I don't know. Maybe this was to make herself feel better because she broke a promise to herself and now she's having a second child when she knows she's not the best mother. Maybe she thought having another child would change her. Maybe she had good intentions, but then later on, she wanted to blame it on someone else because of what happens. What's even worse about this situation is that she goes on to tell her own son, Wayne, that he was a product of rape. Can you imagine your own mother telling you that? As if she doesn't want you and all she can remember about when you were conceived is being horrified and not wanting to have sex with your own father. And of course, now you would probably see your father as some kind of monster as well, if you don't already. Karen never hid the fact, she didn't even try, that she didn't love Wayne. She wouldn't hug him. She wouldn't care for him when he cried. She didn't even watch him to make sure he didn't hurt himself. It's like she just wanted him to disappear, even if it meant he would die. However, and this is really sick, I told you this story is gonna be very weird and disgusting. She admitted she didn't show love to her children and she didn't want to love Wayne, but she said that he had such a perfect, symmetrical body, perfect in every way, and he wasn't chubby at all. So because of this, she couldn't help but start feeling some love for him. What the hell? She's actually looking at her child that way. That's not right. And if you remember this going forward in the story, you may see some of these themes carrying over to Wayne. Karen also admitted that Wayne was such a good baby that she couldn't help warming up to him. And Wayne was so attached to his mother, so that's what made this even more sad, is that he wanted her attention so bad. And she was rough with him, but Wayne would follow her around everywhere. He always wanted to be touching her, clinging to her, you know, on her legs, wrapping his arms around her. And she would just try to shoo them away and go about her day in her own business. And of course the day came where she was going about her own business when Wayne was just 2 years old and he ends up falling down a stairwell. She's not watching him. She's leaving him unattended and he hits his head so bad that he sustains a major head injury. Child abuse, I don't know, tell me what you think. He had to get multiple stitches and he had to be monitored because they didn't want him to have a concussion. In the end, they did discharge him from the hospital and said there could be long-term damage, but that there shouldn't be. Okay. Wayne and his brother Rodney were close when they were growing up. As brothers normally are, they experienced the ups and the downs that come with maturing and puberty, but they did remain close throughout their childhood. But Wayne in particular would go on to have difficulty balancing his emotions. He had this hard exterior that his father always wanted him to have. You know, be tough, toughen up, don't be soft, be a man. The brothers were opposites. Rodney was already that way. He was extroverted. He was your typical boy. But Wayne wasn't. He was timid, he was more emotional, And really, he was what people referred to as a mama's boy. Their childhood was somewhat unique because Gene was in the military, so they got to travel all over the world. And they were given a lot of freedom. Sometimes that's a good thing, other times it's not. But the boys would have so much fun. They would explore beaches and forests. But their upbringing was also different in a darker way. This stems from what was going on with Karen. She was struggling with depression. She was lonely when Gene was away. She's taking care of two kids. She didn't get along with a lot of the military wives. And so she was trying to cling to other relationships, but what she ends up doing and who she ends up clinging to is just wrong. When Gene's away, she ends up getting close to Gene's brother. And if that wasn't bad enough, he was only 15 years old. She also cozies up to one of Gene's military buddies. So when she's accused of this and she thinks she might go to jail or be charged with a crime, she just becomes completely distraught. And that's when Rodney walks in after school, comes into the house, goes to the kitchen, and sees his mother standing in the kitchen with her wrists slit open. And she had done this with a sharp part of open can lids. They were lying on the floor. She just took that can opener, took the lid off, and went to town on herself. Rodney was only 8 years old when he saw this. Witnessing something like that shaped both boys and how they deal with their emotions. Finally, Wayne's parents decided to break up, and the boys were put in their mother's custody. When Wayne was only 10 years old, he started to act out. And his mom could not handle him anymore. She couldn't handle either one of the boys. So she just sent them back to live with their father. Gene, on the other hand, was very aggressive. The boys usually listened to him because he was dominant. He was a big man. He was a tall man. And they were scared of him. He also wasn't afraid to use spanking and other physical injury on the boys anytime they acted out. Tell me, are you a fan of spanking? Do you believe in spanking? Did you get spanked as a child? I know I did. Do you think it results in emotional and mental problems? Let me know in the comments. I'm curious. Of course, Wayne was happy when Gene was away from the military. He was almost never home. So this left Rodney to step in as a father. And it would be fun to have your brother as your father figure because, you know, he's cool and get along with him. He doesn't hit you. And really, Rodney became his best friend and he was completely loyal to Rodney. And he wanted to know, is Rodney loyal to me though? So Wayne started to test Rodney to see how far his loyalty went. So Wayne decides to leave the house in the middle of the night one night. He goes to a hardware store, he breaks in, and he steals a bunch of different items, just random items. The next day, Rodney reads about this in the local newspaper, and Wayne just openly confesses to him what he did. This was a test, remember that. Of course, Rodney says, "Why did you do that?" And Wayne just responds because he thought it was something fun to do and he enjoyed outsmarting authorities. Yeah, we're gonna see how that plays out. The other thing is Wayne knew better than to trust Rodney with this kind of secret because Rodney was a daddy's boy and quickly went and told their father. This brought down a severe punishment on Wayne. He thought he was smart enough to avoid that, but he wasn't. And Gene essentially beat him up. It wasn't uncommon for both of the boys to be left with bruises and welts all over their body. Even though Rodney would tell on Wayne, he held Rodney in high regard and knew Rodney would always come to Wayne's rescue. So it seemed like Wayne actually wanted the reprimand. Despite being scared of his father and his fragile personality, Wayne continued to commit petty crimes. He was arrested for assaulting sex workers. He was arrested for cruelty to animals and also oral sex with someone underage when he was only 17. He stole cars, and you know what? His dad had had enough. So at this point, he forces Wayne to drop out of school and join the Marines. And it seemed like a perfect solution. And it kind of was because he started to do really well. He served 6 years. And then he was honorably discharged, even though he had multiple violations and write-ups. And he was released from his duties in 1985. But at 19 years old, something terrible ends up happening to Wayne. And this is what actually makes me think that it has a lot to do with who he became, and you'll hear my thoughts on that in a minute. But Wayne was dating a girl named Kelly, and they were out on a date. It was the fall of 1980. Wayne was driving from their date, and he sees a bad accident on the side of the road. And because he was transformed by the Marines, he had it inside him to be a good Samaritan. He pulls over to investigate what happened and help the driver because he can see the guy is bleeding profusely, obviously in need of medical care. But when Wayne was kneeling down at the driver's side of the car trying to stop the bleeding, he was hit by a drunk driver. This man was thrown more than 40 feet into the air, and then he landed in an embankment. He broke part of his jaw off, and for over a week, no one thought he was going to survive this. It caused drastic changes in his personality. He became murderous. He was violent. He had these uncontrollable urges. And this can happen in people who have frontal lobe damage because this is the part of the brain that's considered the part that controls your personality. My thoughts are that traumatic brain injuries are a common theme among killers. I see it all the time. It really impacts a person's life going forward. And although it's not an excuse, I say this in every video that I mention this, it's certainly a reason that their minds become warped. We saw it with John Markle. He was in a car accident, and I'll link that video up here and also at the end of the video as well. But the following year, Wayne, still in his relationship, decides it's a great time to propose to Kelly, and she says yes, even though he's going through these mental and physical changes. Not major disfigurement, but breaking your jaw really does change what you look like. But she still said yes. They elope in Vegas, and he's only 20. I think that's really young, especially with his brain injury and the fact that our brains do not fully develop until we're 21. It seems like keeping a serious relationship together would be very difficult. And it was. Their relationship started out fine. Their marriage was okay. But after this injury, Wayne progressively started to get worse. His behavior was too much. But specifically, Kelly could not accommodate his sexual urges anymore. Wayne became obsessively fascinated with Kelly's breasts, to the point of wanting to just have her show them off everywhere, every day, everywhere she went. And most husbands want their wives to cover up, I mean, at least a little bit when they go out, but not Wayne. He treated Kelly like a trophy, and he always bought her and wanted her to buy clothes that showed off her chest a lot. It's understandable that you love the way your partner looks. I like showing off my bosom every now and again, but it's going to go to a place where I don't think is very healthy, that I know is not healthy. The first major turning point for Kelly was when they were having a pool party at their new home. There were a bunch of Wayne's military buddies over. They were grilling out. Some were single, some had brought their wives with them, and Wayne pulls Kelly aside and surprises her with a new bathing suit. Now that in and of itself sounds really thoughtful. The issue was that there was hardly any material to cover anything. A small piece of gold material, it was like a patch, was covering her crotch, and it was made of this thin white fabric. I mean, most of us know not to wear white into the water because we know what happens unless the fabric is very thick. But this fabric was specifically meant to show off Kelly's nipples. When it was wet, the white was completely see-through. It might as well have just not even been on. But Kelly was a good sport and she wore it anyway to please him, but she felt extremely uncomfortable and objectified. I don't know if I could do it. That's very embarrassing. And then you'd have to stand there and pretend like everything was normal. But his demands didn't stop with showing off Kelly's body. It even went so far as requesting more and more from her in the bedroom. So she starts getting really uncomfortable because he wanted sex every day, regardless of whether she was in the mood. He would just keep her up all night having sex sometimes. I mean, not only is that exhausting, but TMI, you actually get sore. I mean, that's not physically fun at some point. And when you're in pain, You don't associate it with pleasure and love and romance. It's usually associated with bad feelings. And this is where relationships can just start to deteriorate. Then he brings on bondage. He brings it into the bedroom and Kelly agrees at first. And he's got this fixation on her boobs and it just started to grow and grow. And at one point, he tries to convince her to let him make a wax mold. He wants her to dip her breasts in wax, in hot wax, and then make a mold that he could cherish and worship and use later to satisfy himself when she wasn't around. I mean, there are stores like Adam and Eve, if you're familiar with that, and there's no shame in using sex toys. It's, you know, whatever, if that floats your boat. And they do have for sale different molds of different private parts, and people do buy those. But this was different because it stemmed from his preference that she just cover her face when they were having sex so that only her boobs were showing. Like, he would cover all of her body and only have her boobs showing. And he just wanted to pleasure himself that way. If that wasn't controlling enough, he wanted to control other parts of Kelly's life. On top of her working, he wanted her to keep the entire house spotless, like OCD spotless. And she was supposed to have a 3-course meal waiting for him when he got home from work. And on top of all that, she had to be naked while doing it, no matter what time of day. Wayne expected when he came home, Kelly would be naked. That was a demand. So she started to feel like a doll. It was so degrading. And then I was thinking about this myself, and I cook a lot. And I was thinking, that is so dangerous, like having things just bare. I would be afraid to burn myself, like badly. She would be sitting on the couch, naked. And he would come over and start feeling on her and sucking on her breasts, even if she didn't want to. Like, she was just casually sitting there, naked, of course. And he would just fondle her anytime he wanted. In any relationship, I think it's very important that it's not a one-way street. If both of you like it, that's fine. But when it comes to romantic partners specifically, they should be able to communicate their wants, their needs, their objections, and both partners should be open to hear that and to respect their wishes. And he was also dealing with mental issues. This wasn't a stable individual. And one day Kelly found out she was pregnant. And her emotions were everywhere. She had mixed emotions. On one hand, it's exciting to know you could bring a child into this world. It's a magical experience. But on the other hand, we're talking about Wayne being the father. I don't think it's a surprise that she wasn't sure how she would feel having a baby with this man. And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, he didn't give her a choice. He forced her to get rid of the baby. He didn't even seem to like children, especially because one time he punched a child at an arcade just because the boy bumped into him on accident. He just punched him and broke his nose and then walked away like nothing happened. This poor boy was wearing glasses, and his glasses became embedded into his face, and it even split the skin above his eye so badly it could have blinded him. If I was giving a friend advice, I would say, seriously, Kelly, run. Don't walk, run, disappear. Wayne never left her alone, but one day she got a little bit of a break from him because he went on vacation with his friends. But this ended up unleashing a whole new nightmare for Kelly, because Wayne's friends called her one night and said something bad happened and Wayne ran away. I can't help but just think douchebags, but what happened was, while the men were on this trip, they decided that they would take off their wedding bands and they would entice some young, beautiful girls to come back to their cabin. These women had some form of sexual relations with these men. Scumbags, but there's a problem. One of the girls that Wayne hooked up with specifically was only 15, and you know this is a crime. So eventually he was found, and that's why he ran, and he was arrested, but the charges end up being dropped and he was released. So here was an opportunity for him to be stopped. There were no details on why this woman dropped the charges. I don't know. Yet still, this was not the straw that broke the camel's back. Soon, there were outbursts in public with Kelly. He would go into a full-on rage. And one night, while playing a card game at a friend's house, he gets into a fight because someone's not playing by the rules or he thinks that they're cheating, and he grabs Kelly and he makes her leave with him. They get in the car, he locks the doors, and he starts speeding. He's driving really fast to the point where if they hit something, they could have died. And Kelly has zero control. When she looks over, he's laughing. He was getting a kick out of this. He kept taunting her. He would drive really fast and then almost hit another car or like a wall, and then he would swerve at the very last minute. That is terrifying. Terrifying. I'm scared to drive as it is, so I don't know what I would do. I might have even opened the door and just fell out of the car and risk getting hurt to get away from him. I don't think I would have ever gone back. But she stays. And anytime she doesn't comply with his wishes or his sexual needs in particular, he would degrade her. He would humiliate her, call her names, chase her around the house. And if she said no, he would even attempt to punch her. And he never would punch her in the face. He would just act like it. And then one time he went so close to her face, but then he punched the wall instead and his fist went all the way through the wall. So you know the force behind that punch. It's hard for women to leave domestic situations, and even men. Women are not the only ones that are abused in these situations. But especially when someone has a hold on you financially, and that was what Kelly was dealing with. She was in the position where Wayne was paying for everything, and he would threaten to find her if she left. But Kelly had to take that chance, and she finally decided she was going to leave Wayne. And this happened after she went out with friends one night. When she came home, he was hiding in the bushes with a compound bow. I'm gonna show you one. He planned on shooting her. Shooting her. Why? Because he was convinced, like a lot of abusers are, that she was cheating on him. He had been sitting in these bushes for over 3 hours in full-on camouflage. She'd had enough. At this point, she actually tried to go to marriage counseling with him, but it was recommended by the counselor that they spend some time apart to cool off, to think about things. So Kelly went to her sister's house. She was just trying to prolong the inevitable, like she was going to leave. Now, Wayne and Kelly had designated a day when Kelly was supposed to come home and talk about their decision. On the day she was supposed to go back home, she was coming home from work. She got a ride from a friend. He was a male coworker. His name was Bob. And she did have feelings for Bob, but at the time, he was more of a confidant. She expected to be home before Wayne. That's why she let Bob drive her home. But when she arrived, Wayne was standing outside with a dozen red roses, just waiting for her. We don't know how long he was there. She was scared because she knew she was with Bob. So she tells him, turn around, just keep on driving. We gotta get away from here. I don't know whether Wayne saw them or not, but he's standing out there for a while, is waiting and waiting, and then he decides to go get drunk. At this point, totally drunk, he calls Kelly's sister's house every 10 minutes, she said, for 3 hours. And then he put his camo back on, and he goes to hide in the bushes again, waiting for her to come home. But instead, of course, her sister told her that he's acting like a maniac. So Kelly goes back to her sister's house. I don't know if I'm going into too much detail, but all of this to me was very significant. So eventually she goes home. And she tells Wayne, it's over. And he lost it completely. He told her, call up Bob or I'm gonna punch you in the face. Because he assumes this is her lover and he wants them to have a conversation together, all three of them. So she's scared and he's demanding that Bob meets them for breakfast that morning at a restaurant. But before they left, Wayne decided to show his control over Kelly. He ends up chasing her around the house and beating her, and then eventually forcing her to have sex. When they show up at the restaurant, she is terrified. She doesn't know what's gonna happen. She thinks Wayne might try to kill both of them, but instead, and this is how you know something is really wrong if you didn't realize already, but he just acts nonchalant. He acts like they are best friends. He's just like shooting the shit with Bob. And then he just says, you know, Bob, you can just have her. I'm done with her. I don't want Kelly anymore. And he asks Bob, do you know any women that are single with big boobs? I mean, that is awkward. But that's really what he said. And then after that, Kelly decides to move in with Bob because she is so scared and she doesn't know where to go. But that nightmare was not over because for weeks, he would stalk her. Even though she moved multiple times, she would get a bunch of calls at work. He would tell her on the phone everything she did that day because he was everywhere stalking her. He knew everywhere she had been. I don't know what Bob did for a living, but whatever it is, he put it off because he would wait outside of Kelly's work so that she was safe from Wayne. But that didn't stop Wayne. He would drive up and he would taunt Bob. He would describe in vivid detail all of the lewd sexual acts he would perform on Kelly. Kelly and Bob had no choice. They had to go into hiding and get away from him. And they hid for 2 whole years. They do end up getting married and they had at least one child together. Wayne can't get a handle on his life and he knows it. So about a year later, he decides to go back into the military. His disorders were getting too much to handle though, and he was detained for assaulting an officer. They decide to have him evaluated at this time. It was April 8th in 1983, and he was only 22 years old when he was admitted into a naval hospital. And this was the psychiatric ward, and he was admitted for homicidal ideations. He became paranoid. He refused to eat anything in the hospital. He believed that everything was poisoned. His personality would go back and forth. He would oscillate between being super happy to being aggressive, and this would happen multiple times a day. He would also exhibit grandiosity by saying things like he was going to be a lawyer. Why do we see this all the time? We see it with Ted Bundy. We see it with Stephen McDaniel, probably other people. But he was afraid that the incident in the psychiatric ward, that's what he was worried about, was going to be a stain on his record and keep him from being able to go to law school. So the nurses would make notes of these unrealistic goals. He would also confide in the nurses in like a really unhealthy manner. He would tell them about how he was accused of seducing an underage girl. And if someone does it again and accuses him of that, he's gonna break their head. But then later, he would see the same nurse and he would be happy and optimistic about his future. And it was like he was two different people. He was even restrained, like physically restrained on a bed. And even rolled into the isolation room because he refused to take medication. And then he would act kind and appreciative. So then they would take away the restraints and then he would do it again. And they call this acute decompensation. But if you want to know his final diagnosis, borderline personality disorder, and my rats are deciding this is a fabulous time for a little drink of water. And you know what? I can't disagree. Now for the educational piece, or one of many, borderline personality disorder, or BPD, presents itself in various ways in different people. For Wayne, it manifested itself with this intense and inappropriate anger. He couldn't control his moods. They would shift, as we could see, from normal to depressed to irritable to having anxiety. And he was also diagnosed with the following. This is comorbidity. So all of these things are existing at the same time. He had depression. He had these chronic empty feelings. He also had atypical psychosis. And this was manifested by psychotic breaks. He would have hallucinations. He would be delusional. And it wasn't because of mind-altering drugs. And when you think hallucinations, you might think schizophrenia, but they rule that out. He also exhibited religiosity, homicidal ideations, and they doubt that the head injuries are connected to these issues, but I beg to differ. He would also manipulate different situations and people, and he was in this decompensated psychotic state. Yet he explained away these incidents by saying that he was just tired. He was working a lot. He was working 14-hour days and he didn't get a break. And that's why these things were happening. Lack of sleep. I mean, it could be a contributing factor, but I don't know. Eventually, he was discharged from both the hospital and the military, and they deemed him a danger to himself and society, but they just let him out to be someone else's problem, I guess. You know, I really want to define borderline personality disorder now that I think of it, because although it's known as a severe mental illness, it isn't really understood. It doesn't mean the same outcome happens in all cases. All of us are different. But I do want to tell you what the symptoms are, because I think it's important that we know these things. We're going to be talking about them in other cases. And some of you may actually be familiar, know someone who has borderline, or maybe you do. And maybe it is important for people to know these things. According to the Mayo Clinic, with borderline personality disorder, individuals have an intense fear of abandonment or instability. They may have difficulty tolerating being by themselves alone. And a lot of times, they show this inappropriate anger. They can be impulsive and they can have frequent mood swings, and they may push people away. Even though they want to have these loving, lasting relationships, their intentions are there. But this intense fear of abandonment usually means they go to extreme measures to avoid these real or imagined separation or rejection. Sometimes it's not happening, but partners can become tired of being accused of these things. But they also have changes with the way they see themselves and their self-image. They can one day think they're amazing at something and very talented and happy, and then their goals will shift and they'll be interested in something totally different and see themselves as not valued or bad at the thing that they were just good at. And with Wayne, he was dealing with a lot of these and he had no support. Once he was discharged, he didn't know where to go. He didn't know how to access mental health care. And his brother was busy starting his own family, and Rodney was in the military. Wayne had no other choice but to move in with his uncle Billy, who ends up getting him a job as a truck driver, which he hated because Wayne thought he was meant for much bigger things. But for about 6 years, Wayne is left to his own devices. And during this time, when he was 25, he ends up meeting a woman from Kuwait named Wadad Radwan. She was in her late teens, and she was working the customer service desk at the trucking company that he worked for. Here, we can see his sexual preferences deviate from the norm even more in this relationship. Get ready for this, because it's intense. He started to prick her nipples with needles. He wouldn't push them all the way through the skin. He would stop, especially if she complained about pain. But he claimed he did this or wanted to do this because he had had a diabetic girlfriend in his past when he was younger, and he started to associate needles with being turned on. He also would record them having sex and then watch it over and over again. Unlike the way he treated Kelly when she said no, if Wadad said she didn't want to do it, he never forced himself on her. Wadad and Wayne move in together, and then one night, this is so weird, some teenagers had stopped him on the road and asked him for some gas money. So he decides to invite them over to their house. You're 25 years old or older at this point, and you're inviting some teenagers over, but okay. Not only that, he is sitting there without a shirt on, playing cards. So of course, Wadad comes home and she is stunned. She's looking, and if the shirtless part of it wasn't bad, she pulls Wayne aside and she goes,
Honey, your cock and balls are showing through your shorts.
Like, Mr. Johnson is flowing free. Like, he was letting it all hang out, if you know what I mean. So she tells him this, and he's smiling. She thought it was an accident. No, it wasn't. He tells her he knows, and that he wanted to make the girls that he brought home look at it. And he wanted to observe her reaction and make her uncomfortable. And that's just gross. It's just really, really nasty. He said that he tried to take some pre-law classes at a community college because he wanted to become a criminal defense attorney. But Wayne, there's a fly in the room, never even got past the 10th grade in high school. But he ultimately did get his GED, and it was confirmed he did attend community college from 1990 to 1992. This next thing is even worse. It just keeps getting worse. Wayne comes home crying one day. He's really upset, and he confides in Wadad. He says he saw a teenage girl walking on the side of the road. He jumps out of his car, steals her purse, throws the purse on the road, oh my gosh, and then bites her boobs. Of course, eventually she had enough of this, but they were having financial problems and she couldn't just leave. So they decided they were going to live more as friends and they were going to rent out a room in their home for extra money. Oh, Wayne. So they finally find a roommate and the roommate's cousin comes over one night to stay over. And Wayne walks outside and in the dark, he is staring through the window at the cousin sleeping on the bed. He actually admits this to Wadad. Why does he do this? It's kind of like admitting what he did to Rodney. It's like he wants to get in trouble. But he tells Wadad, I saw her laying on the bed naked. And he's almost just like having this moment where he's turned on by it. And they break up. But it doesn't take long before he's dating another woman. Her name is Janice. And he met her at the karaoke bar, but it didn't last long either because during sex, he asks her if he can pinch her nipples. And he also wants her to pinch his nipples. She agrees, and she said she was pinching them so hard because he was saying, do it harder, do it harder. She thought they were gonna fall off. But one time, he ends up biting her while they were having sex. And she was like, I can't do this anymore. But the end actually didn't come then. It came when she caught him masturbating over her sleeping daughter. I don't know if she ever filed charges against him or not, but like I said in the beginning, there were times he could have been stopped, and this was one of them. Wadad ends up taking him back, and they move in together again. They have this on and off relationship for about 6 years, and it finally ends for good in 1992. And after the breakup, he's 31 years old, he's at a bar. His next crazy incident, he actually punches a girl and he deems this an accident. And there were just so many other signs. And I'm just asking, why isn't this guy in jail by now? Just a few months later though, he does get arrested. And this is because he tried to shoot a dog that was coming into his backyard. If you know me, I am a huge animal lover, huge dog lover. I have 3 dogs and I want a lot more. I don't know what I would do. I would do something probably bad. I would probably be going to jail too if I saw somebody doing that. Thankfully, he didn't kill or injure the dog, but he attempted to. He calls Rodney. Rodney comes and bails him out, and he even helps him fight this case. And this is what brings the brothers back together. They start hanging out, going on trips, even with Rodney's kids. They're sharing mutual friends. They're four-wheeling. They're hiking, camping, just doing brotherly things together. And at this point, Wayne actually seems pretty stable. He meets another woman. Her name is Elizabeth. They meet at a bar and eventually he ends up getting married to Elizabeth. In Vegas, once again, on October 15th, 1994, when he was 32 years old. And Wayne was 12 years older than her. Why are they always younger? Why do you think? Is it a control thing? Remember his mom? She got together with the 15-year-old. Remember that? Yeah. In addition to all of the other weird sexual desires he displayed with his other girlfriends, Wayne wanted Elizabeth to add on one more thing. He wanted her to have sex with other men in front of him. Now, actually, this isn't that uncommon. I'm just gonna throw that out there. And as long as your partner is in agreement with it, whatever, do whatever you want in the bedroom. And she agreed, so it was consenting. And then he even complimented her the next day. He's like, oh, you were so good last night. So she wants to please him and she ends up doing it a few more times. And then every time he would be on this high for a week, just complimenting her, showering her with compliments and gifts. But this whole time, and usually all the time, he would make her sleep on the couch. He had to get 8 hours of sleep and her being in the bed would ruin it for him. When she attempted to sleep with him, like a normal person, a normal thing your wife would do, she had to lie completely still. She couldn't get up to pee. She couldn't move, nothing. She could like barely breathe. Basically, she had to be a corpse, which may be some foreshadowing here, but she could not be still enough. So the couch it was. Elizabeth eventually gets pregnant, but this time Wayne decides he's ready to have a baby. That didn't stop him though from abusing Elizabeth. He began his pricking impulses again. He would poke her with safety pins. And you know where, you could probably guess, yes, in the nipples. And things started to get harder and harder for Elizabeth to deal with. One morning during the pregnancy, Elizabeth was hungry, which is completely normal. She makes eggs, bacon, toast, and she's sitting on the couch, eating, watching some TV, and Wayne just comes over. He wants to eat her food. Instead of just being an adult and going to make himself something, no, he eats hers. He just takes it away from the pregnant wife and says it isn't his job to make food. And then right after he eats, he's like, I want sex right now. And he attempted to force her to do it. She didn't want to do it. She was upset about the food. She didn't want to do it. She was pregnant, probably tired. He ties a belt around her neck and tightens it and tries to take control of her. But somehow she escapes and she runs out of the house naked. She doesn't get far because he follows her and picks her up and brings her back inside and starts beating her with the belt. She's 5 months pregnant. And for the rest of her pregnancy, he wasn't violent again. It was weird. It was like this crazy outburst, and then he was sorry, which is typical with an abuser. And eventually, she gives birth to their son, Max. As soon as she wasn't pregnant anymore, maybe that's why she got somewhat of a pass, he starts to demand more and more. He wants her to do some role playing and pretend that she's a sex worker. And he wants her to tell him about all the things that she's doing with her pretend clients. Several times right before he was about to climax, he would choke her. And he wasn't too forceful, so Elizabeth would let him do it. But I'm sitting here thinking, wasn't too forceful. This is a man who, I don't have to say, but seriously, not too forceful. He would do weird things. If these things weren't weird enough, he would make her drink from a bottle of vodka until she threw up. And then he even wanted her to put an actual padlock on her vagina so that no one else could get inside. Eventually, she'd had enough. She broke down and she left him because he started refusing to stop continuously masturbating all over their couch. She probably had to clean up his mess, so she was done. But this hurt Wayne in a different way than when Kelly left him, because now he was losing his wife and he was losing his son. And this moment begins to shape the rest of his entire life. When Wayne was with Elizabeth and he had full access to his son, he didn't even spend time with Max. He didn't change one diaper. He didn't bathe Max. He didn't feed him, didn't take care of him. He didn't have any interest in him whatsoever. But then once his son's taken away, that's when he has a mental breakdown. So to ease his pain, he meets up with some friends at a bar. And while he's drunk, he tells one of them that he hates women, especially his ex, because she ruined his life. And I think most of us can agree, though we've said something similar, when someone hurts us, we say things we don't mean. But then he went on to add he wants to kill women, chop them up, and hide them so they would never be identified. That is very gross. That is not normal. But of course, his friends didn't take him seriously. Why not? That's not normal. Then he finally breaks down to his mother. And one night, he calls her up at midnight. He's crying. And he says that nobody loves him and that she never loved him and she doesn't love him. She says she does love him. She always has. And that she's sorry she never showed it or told him. He talks about how he's so alone and how everybody hurts him. Whenever he opens up his heart and he's honest, someone breaks his heart. And all he wants is a family. But you had one. When you heard me say that he called up his mother, were you thinking the same thing I was? Because this was the exact woman. He's going to speak to the exact woman that could have a hand in what shaped him into being this sicko and causing these issues. After a year, Wayne finally gets to see his son, and he brings him a tricycle and a helmet. But these gifts were totally out of place. He was so disconnected from understanding a child because the baby is one. He couldn't walk. And Elizabeth comes to find out that these visits aren't even about Max. They're focused on her. He wants to get back together and he says he'll do anything and that Max doesn't have a mommy and daddy anymore. But she says, yes, he does, because she has a boyfriend. And she would tell him, look, Wayne, we're not getting back together. It's never gonna happen. So you need to figure it out and make it work. Every single attempt that he made to see Max, he would do whatever it took to try to convince Elizabeth to get back with him. He would cry to her, but it didn't work. She was not gonna do that again. He gets a job at a cement company. He moves into a trailer park that's right near his aunt's house, and he really feels like his life is falling apart. And this is when the killing begins. Wayne goes on a murder spree. It was the fall of 1997. It was in late October. Wayne was driving when he sees a woman hitchhiking near Eureka, California. He couldn't help but notice her large boobs, and he immediately pulls over to talk to her. She was troubled. She was on drugs, and she says that she needs a ride to the beach. He agrees, so she gets in his car. As he's driving, he keeps staring over at her, and he can't stop staring at her boobs. He just has this uncontrollable urge to touch them. It was overwhelming, and instead of dropping her off at the beach, he convinces her to come back to his trailer because he says, I'm going to give you some money so you can get back on your feet, which, by the way, he says he truly intended to do, but his urge was too strong, and he attempted to get her to sleep with him, but she denied him. He forced himself on her, and he was being rough. He liked that she wasn't fighting him anymore at one point, and she was letting him do whatever he needed to. But all of a sudden, he notices that she's just lying there. She's just completely still. And that's when he is shocked to find out she's not breathing. And he looks down and his hands are around her neck. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know at this point, according to him, if this was a heart attack or if he had hurt her in some way. And he panics. All the while, he's sitting here thinking that he's making her feel good. And apparently, it went too far. So he doesn't know how long this went on after she was deceased, but now he has to get rid of her. He thinks that dismembering her would be best. So he picks her up, he places her in his bathtub, and he gets to work. But then when it comes to discarding her body, he's looking at all the parts and he couldn't help himself. He became enraged. He was upset about wasting her breasts. So he decides to keep them. Guys, he's keeping her breasts. It's kind of like when he wanted to do the mold of Kelly's so he could like use them later to please himself. It's so disgusting. I want to vomit, but there's more. He decides, I gotta take a minute. He decides to cook them. He cooks them in the oven and they are sizzling and baking, and then he takes them out and he stores them in a coffee can in his cupboard. Oh my God. And he was like, why stop there? He decides to freeze a few of the other limbs, thinking, you know, maybe he'll cook them later. Who knows? He doesn't know what he's gonna do with them, but he places them into his freezer next to his ice cream, his frozen dinners. It's like macaroni and cheese, a hand. Marie Callender's Feast for One, a foot. It's not funny, it's disgusting, and it's the truth, and that's what's so bad. I'm not gonna go into complete detail with other parts of her body that he decided to mutilate and cut up, because it's just too much. But this leads to this new fascination, it's this new addiction of being sexual in a new way. It's an outlet, it's a way for him to forget his pain by just transferring it to someone else. What are people like this supposed to do? I know many of you are not gonna have any sympathy for a killer like this, but as a mother, I do have a side of me that often wonders, what if there wasn't such a stigma? I mean, it is a mental condition. Wanting to kill, there's something off in the brain. So can they get help in some way? I don't know. Just a few days later, on the 26th of October in 1997, during a canoe trip down Eureka's Ryan Slough, something that appeared to be a mannequin was spotted on a muddy bank by a group of duck hunters and photographers that were with them. Let me ask you this. How come this is a common occurrence? To me, I would be more inclined to believe it's a human body, not a mannequin. Why would a mannequin be lying in the woods? In a garbage bin, on a river, just lying around. It's a mystery to me why that's someone's first go-to. One of the photographers used his camera to zoom in, and he saw what looked like buttocks floating up above the water, and they thought that they saw stuffing coming out because there were these yellow stumps on the arms and legs, and it was missing its head. But then when he got close enough to touch it, it felt rubbery and squishy, and then he saw it. The yellow parts were fatty tissue, and he realized it was a human body. They were mortified, and it was the remains of the girl that Wayne had been with. She was missing her head, her arms, and her legs. One of the hunters who had a cell phone immediately called the Humboldt County Police Department. It was such a horrible scene. There were multiple stab wounds on her back, on her sides, on her butt. And the autopsy results revealed that a majority of her stab wounds occurred after she was deceased. This next thing shows you what kind of maybe torture she was dealing with, because there were 11 bruises made before she died. 3 the size of fingertips on her right shoulder. So definitely forced, in my opinion. The rest were on her lower back. And there were stab wounds that looked as if they were made with a double-edged blade. And other wounds, including the pre-mortem ones, were made with a single-edged knife. And they ranged in size from a half inch or less. And they looked like they were done in a jerking, hesitating motion. It's incredible to me that you can tell all of these things. But was Wayne really not trying to hurt her? Remember his story? That he thought he was trying to pleasure her and that it just went too far? Sir, there are wounds on this woman before she stopped breathing. Do you have any theories as to why people like this savagely stab victims after they already died? The most notable and horrific part of this discovery was the severed breasts. Investigators were also unable to identify this woman because there were no fingerprints on her, no head, no tattoos, and no other distinctive characteristics on her body. Now, medical legal death investigation educational piece here from my class on decomposition. Did you know tattoos are very resilient and can withstand decomposition? They're very good for identification. So if you've been on the fence about getting one, this might be your sign. Tattoos will last as long as the tissue they're on lasts. The ink is permanently in the dermis. Even after the tissue is severely decomposed, special wavelengths of light like black lights and photography may be used to enhance the ink in the skin in the remaining tissue. And this is usually done if a body is severely decomposed enough to prevent a typical identification by looking at the face of a victim. Mummies that are thousands of years old have tattoos that are clearly recognizable. Now, there are elements in nature that exist where the corpse is found that play a role in whether we can see the tattoo or not. But here's an example of a decomp with tattoos. In the recent Gabby Petito case, which most of you voted for me not to do a video on, death investigators could have certainly used her tattoos as a preliminary identification artifact until her family or dental records could make a definitive connection, especially because the heat in the dispersed campground, that has an effect on a decomposing body, unfortunately. That's a fact. Back to the case at hand, the body was examined by the county coroner, but it could never be identified, so it was given the name Torso Girl, which I personally find very insensitive, but I suppose that was what was left over. According to the coroner, she was between the ages of 18 and 25, had a dark complexion, and was most likely Hispanic. They also could tell she had previously given birth and she had been deceased for at least 3 days before she was found. It wasn't until 3 months later that 2 people that were cutting driftwood at the beach pulled a dried out, sunburned left arm from debris that had washed up on shore, and the DNA matched the torso. But a DNA match to an actual person in a database was never found. At this point, Wayne gets a job as a long-haul trucker, which makes it really easy for him to carry out these heinous crimes because he's moving from one place to the next, and it's easy for him to just leave before anyone can suspect him. Plus, He's got a 45-foot flatbed that has a sleeping area, or a killing area. Now, the next victim hits close to home, not just because she was killed here in LA, and I live here, but because of where the body was found. Let me explain, because you know I will. Don't hate me, don't hate me, don't hate me. I know you probably don't like two-parters, but this story has so many details. I couldn't get them all in one video, even though I realize many of you have told me you like to pause, watch, pause, come back, and so do I with long videos, but this one meant so much to me. I wanted to give the victims enough time, and this video would be over 3 hours long. So I'm revealing the second half in just a few days, so hang tight, and I will see you real soon.